Tony Abbott, thanks for talking to AM.
Thanks, Sabra.
Do you believe the state governments have been gold-plating their electricity infrastructure and raising revenue through power bills?
If they have, why hasn't the federal government been telling us this for years? We've now had this current government in power for 5 years, and why is this the first time they've ever raised this so-called problem?
Your energy spokesman, Ian McFarlane, said on Tuesday that the states had been price gouging. He said that this was an issue and said the Prime Minister was a latecomer. The energy regulator himself has said prices are too high, but his hands are tied. What would you do about it?
Well, I'd abolish the carbon tax. That's what I'd do.
But specifically on the regulator and the fact that he also says his hands are tied.
Yeah, but if we're worried about power prices, Sabra, what is impacting on power prices now that wasn't impacting before is the carbon tax. So if we're serious about getting power prices down, we would be dropping the carbon tax.
But a large percentage increase of power bills over the last 5 years have been apparently due to this gold plating of electricity assets. You'd do nothing about it?
Well, the last thing you would want would be to see power blackouts or power brownouts. We want certainly security of supply here. But the point I make, Sabra, is that we've never heard about this for 5 years. Now the Prime Minister, she's in a desperate jam over her carbon tax and the carbon tax's impact on prices. She's blaming everyone but herself for this problem. But the problem is now. The carbon tax is now. The carbon tax is responsible for 100% of the power price rise in Queensland, 80% of the power price rise in Western Sydney, 80% of the power price rise in Canberra, and at least 50% of the power price rise in other parts of the country. So it's the carbon tax, which is specifically designed to put power prices up, which is the problem that the Prime Minister is in denial about now.
Well, the regulator was set up under the Howard government with the states in 2006. It was a product of the coalition government. What would you do about it? You're saying that you wouldn't touch it?
Well, the problem is not the regulation of power prices. The problem is the carbon tax putting up power prices. And you see, Sabra, the Prime Minister has a smile on her face every time the power bill goes up, because the whole point of the carbon tax is to raise the price on power. I mean, she keeps saying, we've got to put a price on carbon. We've got to price carbon. Well, the whole point of pricing carbon is to make your power more expensive.
But by what you're saying here this morning, you're saying that this issue isn't a problem, even though the regulator himself has pointed out that he's been, in effect, powerless to do anything about it, even though he's known it's been a problem too for 14 months.
This is a fabrication by the Prime Minister. This is an absolute furphy from the Prime Minister. Why should we believe the Prime Minister now about so-called gold plating of power infrastructure when she's never talked about it for the last 5 years? And why can we believe anything this Prime Minister says? Let's face it, she told us before the last election there would be no carbon tax, and there is. She told us that prices wouldn't go up, and they are going up. Now she tells us that it's not the carbon tax. Well, obviously, it is the carbon tax which is driving up power prices.
Is the risk of an occasional brownout acceptable in a first world country like Australia?
I think it's very important that we have security of energy supply, and I don't think any rational power supplier would be overdoing it. They would be putting in as much investment as is needed to ensure that they properly do their job. And look, the Prime Minister, it's worth pointing out, is giving us a very different tune on investment in power supplies to that which he gives us on investment in the national broadband network.
On that national broadband network, the company's revealed a blowout in the cost of the NBN, but the company says that's because of the initial extra costs of a deal that it's done with Optus, which will see an extra 500,000 customers connected.
Well, the facts about the NBN are it's overcost, it's behind schedule, and it's underutilised. All the things that the coalition predicted about the NBN, the nationalised broadband network, the last thing we need is a nationalised telecommunications monopoly. Sure, we all want better broadband services, but that's what we've been getting over time from the market. And this is plainly a massive overinvestment, and it's massively inefficient.
Cost overruns on big projects, though, aren't new. Do you then vow here that projects under an Abbott government will always be on budget, on time, in accordance with their first published plans, and never alter, no matter what circumstances arise?
Well, Sabra, I think I can safely give a guarantee that I wouldn't promise to deliver something for $4.7 billion and then after a conversation with a minister in the back of a VIP aircraft and a bit of scribbling on a coaster, come out with a $43 billion plan. And look, this is a monumental white elephant, and as time goes by, it's just going to get worse and worse. And as David Thodey of Telstra has said, the coalition's plan would give us better broadband services much more quickly and much more affordably than the nationalised broadband network.
Are you worried that a series of three-cornered contests, one possibly involving Angry Anderson, could derail much of the coalition's federal election preparation in New South Wales?
Well, at the moment, we don't have any three-cornered contests. In the end, this will be a matter for the party organisations. I think that whatever happens, all of our coalition candidates will be fighting against a very bad government and doing their damnedest to replace a very bad government as soon as is humanly possible. I think the Australian people are yearning, Sabra, to trust their politicians once more. I think there is a terrible, terrible sense of disappointment and betrayal in the electorate at a Prime Minister whose word just can't be taken seriously. And what we've got to do is be a coalition alternative that keeps its commitments, and that's why my first commitment is to get rid of the carbon tax, which is doing so much damage to jobs and to people's cost of living.
The Attorney-General, Nicola Roxon, has accused you this morning of dog-whistling with your pledge to repeal a part of Australia's racial vilification laws. She says that that provision has been in existence for the entire time that you were in government, and that you didn't change it then, that you're using it in a political way now. And she says it's legitimate to ask if this is being pursued for some dog-whistle purpose.
Well, what's her evidence? This is just a cheap smear. A cheap smear from a government which specialises in cheap smears.
You've said that you'll amend the Racial Discrimination Act in order to enshrine the principles of free speech. Would those principles then extend to the publishing of Facebook pages like the one that was taken down yesterday, which portrayed Aboriginal people in a negative way?
I certainly think that there are issues with social media which do need some looking at, and we've got a task force working on the issue of social media, and one of the things that it's looking at is stronger takedown powers for the regulator. But what we're talking about with the Bolt case was effectively political censorship. Now, it was only with the Bolt case that Section 18C was used in this way, and it's a good conservative principle, as well as a good liberal democratic principle, that when you see a problem, then you address it. Obviously, Section 18C is a problem in the wake of the Bolt case. That's why it needs to be repealed in its present form.
You're off to Cape York this weekend to help in a working bee to restore Arakoon's library. Do you wish that more Australian workers and business leaders would follow your example? That would not only help living standards for Indigenous Australians, but would be practical reconciliation?
Sabra, look, thanks for raising that issue. I think it is important for everyone to do what he or she can in a practical way to help lift Indigenous standards and try to ensure that we really do have a reconciled nation. As you might know, I've been going up to Cape York now for a number of years as a volunteer. I'm delighted that a number of senior business leaders are joining me. They've achieved great things at Arakoon. Attendance has gone from below 30% to about 90%. Academic results have gone from abysmal to the top half of the state. These are terrific achievements, and this is a practical way of, I guess, Australian leaders in various fields showing their support.
But do you wish that more people would follow your example?
Well, everyone's different, and I don't say that everyone can do the sorts of things that I can do. One of the privileges of being a senior politician is that you can travel in a way that a lot of people can't. You can, I guess, marshal others and influence others in a way that a lot of people can't. But look, I'm pleased to have this opportunity. I think it's a great thing that I've been able to do with Noel Pearson's assistance, to work with Noel and his team to bring about better outcomes. And the fact that there's a community working bee as well as the CEO working bee, I think is a sign that Aboriginal people are pulling themselves up by their bootstraps, and it's great that other people are supporting them in this.